Hello and good afternoon. Welcome to the Dimensions of Diversity podcast with the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. This program is made possible for the generous sponsorship of Aspen Out, and in-kind support comes from Co-Conclusive, a local nonprofit organization dedicated to inclusion for all historically marginalized communities. I am your host, Caleb Cook. I use he, they pronouns, and I'm so excited to focus today's conversation about language equity and language justice. I am joined in the studio today with Brian Alvarez-Terrazas from the Manaus Equity Project and Claudia Paul from Convey Language Solutions. Would you all like to take a moment and introduce yourselves?
Sure thing. Hi. Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for having us on this program. Thank you all for the invitation. My name is Brian Alvarez-Terrazas. I use he and they pronouns. And like Kayla mentioned, I'm the manager of the Equity Action Project in Manaus, and recently got promoted to deputy director. So I'm excited about that.
Slay, did not know about that. Congrats.
Yeah, recent announcement.
Hello, everyone. I'm Claudia Paul. I'm representing Convey Language Solutions today. I'm very excited to be here. As mentioned, I am actually a linguist provider. I help the community with language services, and I'm just excited to be part of the conversation. Thank you for having me.
Again, both, thank you so much for joining us today. Co-Conclusive is so focused on language equity and figuring out ways that we can create a more language equitable valley for all people to be able to be fully included. We know that language can be a barrier for a lot of reasons for participation and inclusion. So I'm really excited to take some time and talk about ways and strategies that you can create a more languageable, equitable experience for all people. Just to jump off the conversation regarding language equity, would either of you like to share a little bit more about what language equity is, language justice is, for anyone that might be unfamiliar with this concept?
Absolutely. So language justice, the act of language justice is to be able to ensure that people in the same space are able to share the language of, or share and participate in the language of their heart or their preference. This does not mean that the person has to be monolingual. So we could have a bilingual person that chooses to participate in the language of their heart, which might be their primary or their secondary language. But we as an organization or as an entity do not choose that for others. We give everyone an opportunity to choose it for themselves and be present fully.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you so much for that, Claudia. I'm really excited to have Claudia here, who is, you know, a provider of these services, helps to get a lot of interpretation and translation out into the community. So definitely shout out to her, her team, and Convey Language Solutions. One thing that I wanted to add is around the power dynamic piece of language itself, right? And so especially in this country, in this community, when we have events, they're typically held in English. If there is interpretation, oftentimes it's English to Spanish. Even then, there's still like this power dynamic that exists between the languages, between, you know, who is more comfortable to speak up in those spaces. So I think striving for language justice includes trying to shift those power dynamics to, you know, can we have part of this presentation be in Spanish or in ASL? Or some other language that helps to shift that power dynamic and to bring more people into that space.
And I know that you are a trailblazer with making sure that interpretation services are adequate and there for everything that you do. I know that you host the Equity Project series with Taka, and recently you had Patagonia Slay. You had a whole drag show with them. Do you want to share a little bit about that experience and how you make that accessible for Spanish speakers and people from the deaf community?
Yeah, you know, I think I couldn't do this work without the support of Claudia and Convey Language Solutions. So again, shout out to them for, you know, doing the work of creating that access to that language, access to that content, to those spaces. I think for us, it's very much a principle to say, you know, even if it's one person in the audience that could use this, we need to have and offer interpretation at this event. For us, it's, you know, a commitment as an organization, as a project for the Equity Speaker Series and for Manaus more broadly, to say, you know, we need to continue to build that trust. We need folks to know that if they come to an event, that there will be interpretation available, not just at a single event, but rather at any event that we host, that they can expect to have that service be available to them. And so that's been, you know, it was a journey to get to that point, but I think alongside our amazing partners who have helped to push us in that direction and to help to hold ourselves and each other accountable, that's sort of where we're at right now. And for, you know, we have two events coming up on September 27th, focused specifically on National Disability Employment Awareness Month, and another one on October 11th, focused on Latino and Latina representation in the arts. Both of these will have interpretation, and we're also looking to get ASL interpretation offered at these events. So I think that that's another one that I would like to throw kudos to Caleb and Cook Inclusive for helping to push me, Manaus, and the community in that direction to really think about all the different ways that language justice can and should look.
Yeah, and thank you so much for your open mind and really understanding the importance of language equity and justice. I'm really fortunate to have a lot of close friends that are part of the deaf community, and I have really been immersed fully into that culture. And going to different events and organizations, there's not always going to be an interpreter. But organizations like Manaus and other organizations that are really pushing for this language justice are really creating that pathway where a deaf person could come to any event in this valley and truly be fully included. I recently just went to Red Rocks this last weekend to see Boy Genius, and my friend was lucky enough to get us tickets in the front row, and we got to be right next to the interpreters, and were able to fully enjoy the show. But the true reality of that situation was the only reason there was an interpreter that night was because someone requested it 2 weeks prior. If a deaf person wants an interpreter and wants to go to a concert, they have to plan weeks in advance to get that service coordinated. So thank you again for really just making sure that's always a piece in the work that you do.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that, actually. That's something that was kind of in my head as Brian was speaking so eloquently about the work that they do and how magical it is to partner to bring this forward to the community. This is a right for everyone to have the ability to have the language that they prefer or an interpreter in a certain scenario. It doesn't matter which one it is. Title VI of the Constitution brings us that through social human rights. And so we should be strong enough and also feel encouraged to ask for those interpreters anytime that we have a situation where we think we'll need one. The rest of us can accommodate, and the government has funding that can also bring interpreters out if they are requested with enough time, free of charge to certain communities. And so specifically for the deaf community, for the other languages, it's still in the works. As Brian said, it's been quite a journey for the longest time. Language services were not recognized as an official profession. So for us interpreters and agencies, it has been an uphill battle to prove our worth, to also make sure that we are providing that service that is so needed and that all the communities deserve to have, plus it's their right. And then we also have this other barrier of organizations not being aware or maybe not quite hearing the message that this is something that we should all be providing in general.
So if there's any organizations listening in right now, what's something they can do to actually make sure that they are paving the way for language justice in their organization and their events and anything they offer?
For starters, I would say make sure that there's always a budget for interpreting translation services. Ask maybe a consultant to help you look at what's going on with your website, with the way you're approaching the community. And when you're thinking about language justice, in our community here in the Rolling Fork Valley, we're primarily Spanish speakers. There's the second largest community. However, there are other languages, and so we should all be open to hearing the voices of those that may request an additional language or more. And if that's an option that we can offer in our websites and the content that is printed out that we give out and also through interpreters, we should absolutely look into that.
Yeah, and I would love to just add in a little bit about Instagram and Facebook. Yeah. There's two features that you can really utilize. First off, Instagram, you can post as many photos as possible. So you can provide that translated document on both slides when you post it and in the bio. And then additionally, the accessibility requirements on Instagram, you can go and post in and have image descriptions for people that might need that. So there's just so many ways that you can really pave that way, and it's possible to be able to include everyone in your promotions and in everything that you do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and one thing that I'd like to add, thank you both for what you offered. That translation piece, like you were saying, is a big part of it. You know, if you have interpretation or if you're offering interpretation and nobody knows that, you know, don't be surprised if nobody shows up, right? So it's getting that message out. It's making sure that you're advertising in the right places. You know, if you are just sending this out as a line in your newsletter that doesn't have folks already signed up, you know, thinking about, like, how are people getting access to this information? How are you getting that word out? And I think at that core there is the relationship piece where, you know, if I bring in an interpreter for ASL, for example, but I don't know anybody within the community, I don't personally invite them or take the time to build those relationships, and I can't really expect folks to, you know, all of a sudden trust and show up. So I think it's the advertising piece and it's the relationship building piece as well.
I love that you said the relationship building, because that has been so fundamental. When we work with the Aspen Camp for the Deaf, we make sure there's interpreters there at our events, and then they come back week after week because they know there's going to be an equitable way for them to enjoy the event. One of my really close friends, he is deaf and will not go to events unless he knows there's an interpreter. So we talked about going to Mountain Fair, but it wasn't something that he was super interested in because he didn't have that language equitable experience available to him, or at least advertised to him. So again, making sure all of your promotions and everything are ASL and Spanish interpretation available, right in in whatever language that you're providing it in, is always so important.
Exactly. That's another thing that I was going to add, because I think a lot of efforts sometimes come from a place of a blind spot. So a lot of times we will put information out in English saying that we will have Spanish interpretation, but the message itself is still in English. So we are not getting through, and we're not sending it out in a way that it's culturally relevant. So the message will not be heard. And so in order to create those relationships that we are talking about, we both want to be advertising it consistently, constantly, have it every time, as well as actively reaching out into the community, perhaps tapping into our bilingual allies, organizations such as Manaus that are doing such important work in the community already, and asking, what would you recommend in this scenario? Now, honestly, we want to make sure that we are not taking advantage of those organizations, meaning be respectful of their time and whatnot. But I believe most of us want the same result, and that is to come together as community and have those relationships.
Mm. Yeah, thank you so much. And something that Claudia said to me that has stuck with me ever since is that, you know, if you only offer interpretation for like a Cinco de Mayo event or a Dia de los Muertos event, for example, what sort of precedent does that set? It kind of says, you know, we care about your participation, but only in these specific events that are around your culture. For the rest of them, you know, we're not too concerned about it. If you show up, it's great. If not, you know, it is what it is. And so I think that that's something that's really stuck with me from what Claudia has told me is, you know, not just having that expectation for events that are specific to, you know, a certain community, but rather, you know, how do you embed this and incorporate this throughout your programming, throughout your organization?
Absolutely. One of the things that I also do some consulting work with some of my clients at the same time that I'm providing the language services through my team is that we want to make sure that that message is constant for all the things that we're offering and all the different invitations we're sending out, because we want to look at this community or any other community as just that audience that we're trying to tap into. So the same way that we would adjust to reach into a young audience, a kid's audience, we would change everything about the way we do our messaging. It's no different. We're doing the same thing to try to tap into the Spanish-speaking community. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they only speak Spanish. It just means that the culture is different, and Spanish is one of the languages.
I love that you brought up culture, because I think there is a huge difference in language justice that's accommodating for culture versus just interpretation. Would you like to touch on that a little bit?
Absolutely. So for me, for example, every one of my interpreters is certified, and we are at the very least qualified. And when my interpreters are only qualified, they witness and they do a lot of shadowing until they are certified in order to be able to provide the service. It's very important that we touch into that human side of the person that is receiving the service, because we want to be able to navigate that. So a lot of times we will wear this cultural broker hat as an interpreter to be able to ensure that the message between two parties of different cultures, it's being received in the way that it would be if either one of them were part of each other's culture, if that makes sense.
Snaps for that.
One thing that I find really interesting too is that, you know, Spanish, within Spanish, you have like Mexican Spanish, which even within Mexico has so many different variations. Compare Mexican Spanish to like Chilean Spanish, you know, a lot of the words are going to be different. And so, you know, that just sort of adds to the complication in terms of that cultural brokerage piece of ensuring that the message is being conveyed in a way that is, you know, comprehensible for both parties. And so kudos to the interpretation team for having to, you know, navigate all those different cultural pieces.
Thank you. I think it's important to also note, thank you, O'Brien. That's actually a really great segue. It's really important to note that we're always educating ourselves. Continuing education is a requirement for all our professional interpreters and in any language and in any part of the world. And so we're always learning not just the language itself, but different registers of the same language. So I should be able to be in a legal setting at the same time that I can be in a medical setting or a community setting in the same day and be able to both physically, emotionally, and professionally deliver this product that I'm giving to the community, which is the interpretation piece with the cultural, I guess, undernote in all of this that we're doing. And in order to do that, you don't just pull somebody off the street because they happen to be bilingual and expect them to perform that way. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to the provider. And it's not fair to the person receiving the service.
That actually brings me to a really interesting conversation I had recently regarding where there's tokenism in the Latino-Latina communities within work settings, because, oh yes, you're bilingual, bicultural, we're going to use you as our interpreter even though you have a different job. Would you like to touch a little bit about that, Brian?
Yeah, I'd love to. I actually did a whole presentation on tokenism this past Friday in collaboration with Convey Language Solutions, Mezcla Social Dance, and Dance Initiative. And it was for this reason, right? And, you know, before I jump fully in, I was talking to somebody today about tokenism, and they had never heard the term. They're actually one of my cousins, and she's, you know, starting to be a part of all these different opportunities, all these different organizations. And I started to explain to her what tokenism is, and she's like, wait a minute, that's happening to me right now. So I think that that's why, for me right now, tokenism is such an important topic for us to be exploring as a community, is because, you know, as organizations try to bring in and include other folks from different cultures, from different backgrounds, different lived experiences, there is this fine line between inclusion and tokenism, right? And so it's really easy to fall on either side of that line. But what really distinguishes tokenism is this expectation that is put on this individual to say, you know, can you please speak on behalf of your whole community? Can you serve as a representative for that community? Can you do this work that wasn't a part of your job description? Can you build these relationships with your community and bring them to our events and bring them, you know, into the organization? But you're the one responsible for handling those relationships, and we're just going to support you from the back. So I think for me, that is, you know, one of the frustrating parts is that, you know, we're sort of pushed into these positions oftentimes because if we say no, then those doors are closed on us, right? And so we're sort of like in a rock and a hard place in a lot of these situations where we either have to sign this agreement to be under these conditions, or we don't have access to that opportunity in the first place.
Thank you. I just think this intersects so well with the queer community. Queer tokenism happens every day in the workplace for a lot of queer folks that we work with. And we just know that even though I'm queer, doesn't mean I'm an expert on it. But sometimes we are the one queer person they know. And so they'll call us in for all these things. And again, the door is closed unless you take advantage of the opportunity. So you feel that internalized social justice guilt, because you're like, if it's not me, I'm making it harder for people after me.
Right.
Which is just, I don't know if you have had similar experiences or anything like
that. Yeah. I'll touch really quickly on an example. You know, I worked for an organization that asked me to translate some of its documents. And, you know, at that point, especially, like, I didn't feel comfortable doing it. But for me, my internal thought process was, if I don't do it, then it doesn't get done. Right. And for me, that sort of felt like a disservice to the community, for the folks that could have access to that information. And so I ended up doing it, even though it didn't feel right or sit well with me. But I sort of felt like I didn't have another choice. So right now it's sort of wanting to, you know, empower ourselves for those of us that are starting to feel tokenized, to say, you know, we have a right and a need to start saying no to some of these requests, to start pushing back and saying, I'll do this under these conditions. And if I have this specific support, and if they're not willing to, you know, meet you in that place, and, you know, being okay with sometimes letting that opportunity pass. But I know it can get complicated when, you know, you're not the only one affected. But Claudia, absolutely. I'd love to hear.
Yeah, no, I agree with a lot. I mean, I was nodding my head the entire time you were talking, because honestly, we do get, anyone of us that ends up in that position, right, where we're being asked to represent a world beyond us. We are just one person, and we're our own little world. And Spanish speakers, the one Spanish speaker in your organization is not going to represent the 20 different Spanish speaking countries that you are asking them to represent at that moment in time. It also doesn't mean that they are qualified to do this one task that you are asking of them. It's no different than asking a dishwasher to now jump in as a cook, because, hey, you can cook, so let's do this, right? It's exaggerated, I get it, and it's a little funny that I say that, but the reality is it's no different for us to be asked to do this task that we are not trained for. We're not qualified. Many times we don't feel comfortable. We don't feel like we have the right or the opportunity to say no. Mm-hmm. And the reality is we do. Mm-hmm. Any one of us, bilingual or not, has the option to say no to any task that's being asked of us, especially if it's not in our job description, if we're not prepared for it, if we're not being trained for it properly. It would potentially have results that could harm the person that's receiving the service, the language. So if I'm not familiar with something that's preferable to the deaf community, I'm not going to jump in and say, oh, I'm an interpreter, it must be the same. I know for a fact the deaf community has a very different culture in the way that they communicate, in the way that they request things, in the way that they carry on their lives. And so I wouldn't feel qualified, and I wouldn't feel like I'm the right person to talk about that, even though I am an interpreter. So I would never want to be put in that position either. So when we end up in these positions and we feel like all of a sudden the doors closes on us, then yes, we get into this space of, but if I don't do it, nobody else will, or no one else will have an opportunity. So perhaps asking the organizations to be more human about this and give us an opportunity to speak our truth, to say no, and to know that that's not a personal or a lack of being a player in this organization or a team player, I'm trying to say. It doesn't mean that we don't want to work there. It just means that this one particular thing is not something we feel comfortable doing.
And just going back to what you mentioned earlier, the first step is putting a line item in your budget for interpretation services. Mm-hmm. When we think about that, interpreters are very qualified and go through a lot of vigorous training, I'm sure you know already. And so they should be paid for what they are doing. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you are working a $20 an hour job and all of a sudden you're asked to interpret. As an interpreter, you'd be making well over that. So it's making sure that you're actually getting paid what you're worth and doing the things that you are qualified to do.
Absolutely. To add a little bit to that, and I'll try to keep it short. When we are paying someone because they are bilingual, that extra dollar, because you're bilingual, does not mean you are an interpreter as well. You are not a community advocate. You're not a community liaison. You're not any of those other titles that you would hire a completely separate person to do that.
Yeah, and so you'd be looking at a separate line item for an interpreter or interpreter services.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I'd like to add, especially as we're talking about, you know, bringing in different community members into these events, these spaces, I think my ask to different organizations is like, hone in on your why, first and foremost, of like, why do you want these specific communities here? Is it to check a box? Is it to say that you have that representation there? Is it because you're feeling forced to do so because of grant funding? Is it to take a more diverse picture? Or is it to really, you know, empower and include and provide access to these different opportunities to community members that have been historically, you know, excluded from these spaces, from these services, from these opportunities? So really honing in and being able to name your why as an individual and as an organization.
Thank you, Brian. Intention is so, so important when you're doing this work. And really making sure that you're uplifting. If you don't know, you can only do the best you can with what you know. Mm-hmm. And so my biggest advice is, if you feel like you might not be doing it the right way, ask the people that represent these communities. Ask the experts like Claudia and Brian that know language equity, language justice, and how to really truly provide this inclusively. So again, yes, it's I'm so happy we're having this conversation today because it's so important in our valley because we have such a diverse, rich, beautiful community with so many different languages. And so it's so important that we're really paving this way to bring inclusion everywhere.
Another thing I would add to what Brian was just saying is that once you hone in on your why, and if your intentions are pure and your passion to do this is because you want to empower those that are perhaps Spanish-speaking Latinos or Spanish speakers that just happens to be leaders, is, yes, bring them in, make them part of your team, and then let them do what they do best. Mm-hmm. Allow them to be leaders in the role, and don't try to tell them what to do because you've always done it a certain way. Right. But listen and be open to letting them do what they do because they are the experts, as you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let others lead in the way that they want to lead. Yeah. And I think that, you know, looking forward, the demographics of our community are going to continue to change. So I'm curious to see, you know, at some point there are going to be other minority groups, or there are existing minority groups. And so how are we going to be walking the walk as well? You know, with what we're asking of others, how are we going to do that with other communities as well? Yeah.
Well, we're actually almost out of time for today's show. Is there anything else you'd like to add regarding language justice? Anything you want to leave the community with?
I would say if people are honestly trying to be a part of this, make it known and talk about it and be part of the conversations. Go to the events. Be open to going to those other events that you're unfamiliar with that may all be in Spanish and be a part of the community that way, mm-hmm. instead of just expecting people to come to your parties or your events or be supportive of you only. Mm-hmm. It has to be reciprocal.
Mm-hmm. Period.
Literally.
Yes. One thing I'd add to is, you know, with wanting to engage the Latino community, there are English speakers within the community as well. And so, you know, offering language justice is one step, but it also goes beyond that. So that's what I'd leave with.
Well, thank you both so much for today's conversation. I feel enlightened. I feel so happy that we were able to really spread this message to our community. Again, you have been listening to the Dimensions of Diversity podcast with the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. This program is made possible from the generous sponsorship of Aspen Out, and in-kind support comes from Co-Conclusive, a local nonprofit organization dedicated to inclusion for all historically marginalized communities. Again, my name is Caleb Cook, and thank you so much for listening. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.